that they are almost always the same. Girls basically all wear a blue sheet over their uniforms, while boys borrow altar boy robes, and sometimes, if they are really into it, they get fake beards. When I was chosen, Sister Catherine seemed anxious about it, like she wasn't sure that it was such a good idea for me to be on display in the middle of church, but she said nothing. She didn't even talk to my mom about it, which I thought was odd, given the circumstances, but didn't question it because for once no one was calling me crazy. After all, I am supposed to be the Lamb of God, here to remove the sins of the world. Adam, how do you think Jesus would feel at this moment? Sister Catherine asked seriously.
Be nice, Jason advised, appearing out of nowhere.
I tried to avert my gaze from his blindingly white butt cheeks as he strolled down the row of pews, but it was impossible. I looked at the robe I was wearing and tugged at the fake crown of thorns, which actually did itch like hell, and wanted to respond to Sister Catherine sarcastically, but was saved from having to say anything when someone farted and the crowd immediately dispersed. Jason had already vanished. It's actually kind of fascinating. There aren't many school performances that focus on the murder of the main character. The whole story is about my slow and painful demise, like a parade of inhuman suffering that keeps Catholics coming back for more.
Come see the junior class's production of The Stations of the Cross. Watch Jesus die. Again.
I'm not one to beg for popularity, but if I had been just a little bit more likable, I probably could have gotten a sweet gig as a Roman soldier. Maya came over later to watch me bake cookies. Before you ask, yes, we do go out, but for the most part we just hang out. She never asks questions about baking, which I think is odd because she's curious about everything else.
Do you want me to teach you how to bake? I asked.
Nope, she said a little too quickly.
Why not? I asked.
It was unlike her to avoid learning something for herself. Cookies don't require any thought if all you're doing is eating them, but they require a certain degree of thoughtfulness if you make them for someone, she said.
I could have argued, but I didn't want to take that away from her. Sometimes you just want to enjoy someone handing you a plate of cookies.
Chapter 26.
Dosage, 4.5 milligrams. Same dosage.
March 6, 2013. At some point, Dwight and I probably could have stopped meeting up on Monday nights, and our moms would have been appeased. But we're creatures of habit, so we kept it up. And Dwight is actually pretty laid back. Even though he talks nonstop, he doesn't really go out of his way to make friends at school. It makes me wonder how he'd react if he knew everything about me. Not that I'm stupid enough to tell him. Somehow our dads came up in conversation when I told him about my mom and stepdad. Dad left when I was 8, I told him. Dwight pondered this for a moment. My mom was artificially inseminated, he said. There's really no response to that. I think I stared at him blankly until he said something about his mom being too busy with her career to devote any time to dating. But I'm not sure if that was just what she told Dwight. If I had wanted to mention anything personal about my own life, that would have been the moment to do it. There's definitely a divide between the people in my life who know everything about me and the people who don't. It's probably unhealthy to create that between the people I spend most of my time with. It probably means I'm trying to compartmentalize my crazy. I overheard Paul on the phone with his mom the other day. Most people would say she's a nice old lady, the kind who always has hard candies and would never dream of showing up at a party empty-handed. But she's very comfortable with words like oriental and colored at home, and whispers the word Mexican when we go out to eat. Nobody bothers to tell her that Mexican isn't a dirty word. Like I said, she seems nice, but she's not. She doesn't trust me.
She said as much when she asked me if I could let her know when I was starting to lose control so she could do something. She pulled a can of pepper spray out of her purse and shook it at me. What the hell, lady? No, not to get an ambulance or alert someone to the fact that I was having an episode due to my debilitating mental condition. That bitch wanted to pepper spray me in the face. I didn't tell my mom, because she has a hard enough time putting up with Paul's mom in small doses. If she found out she'd said something like that to me, it would just make things worse. When my mom got pregnant, Paul's mom started calling more often. It was usually on Paul's cell, but once in a while it was the house line. We must be the only family that doesn't use caller ID, and my mom pays dearly for it every time her mother-in-law calls to give her unwanted advice about the baby. Like about how if it's a boy, she has to have him circumcised, which she knows my mom is vehemently against. And yes, she was against it when I was born too. So now you actually do know more about me than you ever wanted to know. Anyway, I overheard Paul on the phone with his mom the other day and knew they were talking about me. To Paul's credit, he actually didn't say anything that wasn't true. I overheard, "Yes, we've got it under control. No, mother, I am not underestimating anything, and if you accuse me of not taking my child's safety seriously again, I'm going to get very angry with you. Love you. Bye." Paul ends every phone call with family members with, "Love you." No matter how heated the argument is, he could have had a conversation like, "I hate you, and I hope you realize how much shame and dishonor you've brought on the family. Love you." Since I can't talk to Maya about this stuff, the business of being crazy, I talk to her about other related issues like the baby. The problem is that Maya has a pretty easy time ignoring me when she's studying. She hears everything I'm saying, somewhere in the back of her perfectly cataloged mind. But she will not let anything ruin her concentration until she is finished with her thought. She can sit for hours with a notebook in perfect silence without letting anything interrupt her. She's trained herself to do this because she wants to be a doctor someday. Not a doctor who sees patients. A researcher. She doesn't like people, and she definitely doesn't like dealing with their problems on a human level. And yes, before you ask, that is something that I've known for a while. Maya likes person. Singular. People in a group basically suck. With the help of my medication, I can hide my problems from her. Well, the big one. If she thinks it's weird that I have chronic headaches and insomnia, she doesn't say anything. Those things on their own don't point to what I have. She's empathetic when she wants to be, but she does it in her own Maya-ish way. By pointing out a problem and then agreeing with you that yes, it does in fact suck balls. Like when we were talking about the baby after academic team practice. There's always going to be this huge difference between the way the first kid was raised and the way the next one is raised, she said. Since you have different dads and a gigantic age gap between you, it'll be huge. I mean, you could potentially be another father figure for this kid. You should also be prepared for the fact that they will get away with pretty much everything. If you weren't allowed to do something as a child, chances are baby 2.0 will get away with it, no problem. She took her glasses off and looked at me very seriously. When I was little, I had a chore wheel. My mom would put things on the chore wheel that I had to do or I wouldn't be able to watch TV or have dessert. When my brothers were born, the chore wheel was abolished. There were two of them, so my parents abandoned all previously established codes of conduct because the main things became keeping them clean and fed. It took a long time to potty train them. They're almost 6 now, and they still have accidents. The bathroom I share with them never smells right. The trash can in there is regularly filled with dirty underwear. My mom literally rewards them for not shitting their pants. Practically throws them a parade for not shitting their pants. That is what you have to look forward to, Adam. They get rewarded for not shitting their pants. It's best that you just accept this now. It'll make things easier. So yeah. That was really helpful non-advice. We had our final academic team match on Tuesday after school.
Dwight was in rare form, Maya solved a pretty complicated equation, and I was happily benched. No hallucinations. At the end of the match, we all sat around while some seniors packed up the game equipment and folded the chairs. Claire and Rosa were talking about prom coming up in May, while Maya and Dwight argued about some homework problem I'd stopped paying attention to about 5 minutes earlier. My friends talk about boring shit sometimes. In the middle of their argument, Maya absent-mindedly put her hand on my thigh. No one else noticed. It was natural and completely innocent, but something about the way she did it felt good. Like I was being claimed. And I guess you're not supposed to want to be claimed by someone, but I really don't care. I'm her person. Yep, I feel fine. Chapter 27.
Dosage, 5 milligrams. Increased dosage.
March 13, 2013. Doc, I should start this by saying you've looked really tired these past couple of weeks. I don't know what's going on at home or if my therapy sessions have become more exhausting for you than normal, but you should really get some sleep. Your eyes are all bloodshot and you look like hell. I assume that you already know what the other doctor said. The tests were inconclusive, so they're running them again. But they've basically told us that the drug might be doing more damage than good.
Adam, we've been monitoring your vitals and making note of any radical changes. And unfortunately, though there were positive signs to begin with, it does not appear that you will be a good candidate for this treatment long term. It would be detrimental to the study to continue using your data, because even though you have not reverted to your previous state, you have already exhibited signs of resistance to the drug. We will begin tapering you off to lower doses.
It was sort of harsh the way they told me about it. Detrimental to the study. Like I was a lab rat. They didn't tell me this the way they'd tell a patient with cancer that chemo isn't going to work, because cancer is sexy. I don't mean that it's better than schizophrenia, or that people who have it are sexier than people who have anything else. Or that cancer is actually sexy. Obviously. I mean that cancer patients don't frighten anyone. When you have cancer, people are sympathetic. They feel something for you. And people even hold races to raise money for your cure. It's different when people are afraid of what you've got. Because then you get some of the sympathy, but none of the support. They don't wish you ill. They just want you as far away from them as possible. Cancer Kid has the Make-A-Wish Foundation, because Cancer Kid will eventually die, and that's sad. Schizophrenia Kid will also eventually die, but before he does, he will be over-medicated with a plethora of drugs, he will alienate everyone he's ever really cared about, and he will most likely wind up on the street, living with a cat that will eat him when he dies. That is also sad. But nobody gives him a wish, because he isn't actively dying. It is abundantly clear that we only care about sick people who are dying tragic, time-sensitive deaths. I got nervous when the doctors told me they might take me off the drug. Mom says they aren't going to do anything hasty and we're still going to find a medication that does everything I need it to do. But I think she was just trying to keep me calm. She was trying to say the things she knew would make me feel better, because that's what moms do. But I was still nervous. And sometimes when I get nervous, I try to do things that aren't always a good idea. It started with the weird skin around my cuticle. The stuff that looks like frayed pieces of string cheese. I pulled at it. When I saw red flesh and the blood underneath, I kept going because it was the kind of pain that felt satisfying. Like the time I pulled out 3 baby teeth when they weren't even loose because it felt good to pull them. I mean, it hurt, but in a good way. Like the way sucking a canker sore feels good. So I pulled the cuticle skin up to my first knuckle. That was when I stopped because I was bleeding a lot, and I knew I wouldn't be able to hide anything worse than that. My mom would know I'd done something if I had anything more than 1 band-aid on my finger. She always knew when there was something off, even if she can't always remember where she left her cell phone. A Band-Aid wouldn't draw attention. It wouldn't make me lose my kitchen knife privileges. I'm not sure it was just the possibility of being taken off the drug that made me nervous. I also seen someone at the grocery store a few days ago. Someone I hadn't seen in more than a year. Remember Todd? The old best friend I told you about? He lives a few streets over from my house, and in kindergarten we both had the same Batman lunchbox. We used to ride our bikes together. Back when I was first diagnosed a year and a half ago, I told him everything. For a few days after that, he was still my best friend. He didn't act like anything was different. Then my mom got a call from his mom. I couldn't tell what his mom was saying, but my mom was using language I couldn't believe. She listened to Todd's mom for a few seconds and then said, "He is nothing to be afraid of." Her words came out of her like a low, dangerous hiss, and when she hung up, she was shaking. I was in the hall when this happened, just watching her through a crack in the door. We didn't talk about it after it happened. I just suddenly understood that I wouldn't be seeing Todd anymore. But anyway, there he was in the grocery store. I didn't notice him at first. Rebecca did. I just sort of followed her gaze to where he was standing next to the breakfast foods. He was twirling the keys to his mom's Acura around his finger in a distracted sort of way while he looked at cereal. So that meant he already had his license and he was running errands. He pretty much looked the same. He'd started growing a beard. If we were still friends, I would have told him it looked like his chin was growing mold. But we weren't. So I didn't. He was wearing a weird anime t-shirt from some obscure Japanese cartoon, and he had an open bag of gummy bears propped on the child seat of his grocery cart. It always bugs me when people eat things in the grocery store before they buy them. The last time I saw him, he'd acted like nothing was wrong. We talked about the stuff we normally talked about and played video games. But after that phone call from his mom, I stopped seeing him. I secretly hoped that it was his mom who'd made him stop coming over. But Todd always did stuff his mom didn't like. He hid candy under the floorboards in his bedroom because his mom wouldn't let him have processed sugar, and he snuck out of the house all the time. He bought Playboys. I'd seen him smoke weed. So I knew it wasn't because of her. As I stood there, I made a list of all the stuff I wanted to say to him. Every snarky thing that ever crossed my mind about him. But then Rebecca just looked at me and shook her head. She raised her middle finger in Todd's direction, and I smiled. I got into a checkout line and left with the four items I needed. I know he saw me before I left, because there were only three people behind me in line. I'm pretty conspicuous. He knew it was me. He definitely knew. I turned around for a second when I got to the exit and noticed that Todd was deliberately looking away. He didn't want to make eye contact. So I left and didn't tell anyone I'd seen him. Definitely not Maya, because then I would have had to tell her why we weren't friends anymore. I wonder if someday he'll tell people that he had a friend who was schizophrenic and that it was too difficult to maintain the friendship because of the severity of the illness. He might get a few sad nods, and even some sympathy from strangers who think he was a nice person for trying. I thought about keying his mom's Acura on the parking lot for a second, then just walked home instead. Rebecca did cartwheels. Chapter 28.
Dosage 4.5 milligrams. Begin to taper off.
March 20, 2013. I feel fine. As you know, my doctors made a decision to keep me on the drug for the time being, but to taper it off gradually. We won't be increasing the dosage or changing the medication, which is a relief. None of the really harmful side effects have manifested, and the blood tests are still inconclusive, so my mom insists that I stay on it until something else can be arranged. Not sure how familiar you are with the nasty side effects of coming off a drug you've gotten used to. But that is also a lovely spilled bucket of diarrhea. The other doctors have mandated weekly blood and urine tests for now, but that's hardly difficult. They probably talk to you a lot, too. One nice thing about you, Doc. You never make me pee in a cup. That's why you're my favorite.
Oh, yeah, it's a blast being Jesus. Our last Stations of the Cross practice is next week. I think I've mastered the role. I bow my head when Pontius Pilate washes his hands of my death. I let the girl playing Veronica put a cloth against my face to leave an imprint with my blood. I let two Roman soldiers nail me to a cross without screaming, because it was determined in years past that a screaming Jesus being nailed to a cross is really quite distressing to watch. Then I die with dignity after another soldier pokes me with a spear and proclaims that I truly am the Son of God. Sort of like the way an old lady pokes meat at the grocery store and asks, "Is this fresh?" Dwight, as the narrator, leads the church in prayer, and I rise from the dead. So yeah, I'm ready to be Jesus. It's nice to have a distraction from the baby. Paul is really overwhelmed with all the baby preparations. If I had to describe him, I'd say he looks a lot like a crumpled umbrella. When he leaves for work in the morning, he already looks defeated. But he also looks kind of relieved to be getting out of the house. My mom has been making him go to a bunch of classes. Lamaze. Baby first aid. Breastfeeding. It's been a while since my mom had a baby. Obviously. Actually, I don't think she ever thought she'd be in this position again. She thought it was going to be just me. But now that she's with child, her friends from work and book club are throwing her a baby shower. They are handling the games, the decorations, the invitations, and everything cutesy. I'm in charge of the desserts. Cream puffs with pink and blue filling, tiny baby bottle cookies, layered carrot cake because it's my mom's favorite, and a vast assortment of cupcakes. Our house has become a shrine to tiny, ridiculous things. Gifts have started pouring in even though the party is still a few weeks off. Since my mom refuses to learn the sex of the baby, everything is yellow, the color for parents who wish their babies to be sexually ambiguous and confusing for people who look anxiously into strollers, expecting to know immediately what they're looking at. It's amazing, because now that we don't live in the Middle Ages, I think it would probably be a good idea to take advantage of the scientific advantages available to us. But when the doctor asked if they wanted to know the sex, my mom said that they wanted to be surprised. Paul actually does not want to be surprised. I know for a fact that it is killing him not to know. The man lays out his clothes the night before work and folds everything in an obsessively neat pile. He wants to have a plan of action for everything. But he didn't fight my mom on this because he's suddenly become a weenie. She's become even more powerful with the pregnancy because almost everything makes her cry, and Paul can't handle that. He'd rather give her anything she wants than watch her get upset, which means they are going to have some serious discipline problems as it is with this kid. My mom told me to invite Maya to keep me company, because Paul's mom is going to be there. And even though she's forbidden from talking to anyone about me, she's still annoying as hell. So Maya's coming. Maya came over while I was taking inventory of the kitchen. She made the list of ingredients I'd need and sat dutifully while I pulled out equipment and then tucked things away. Every so often, she'd look up at me and smile. And I'd remember that we were basically in the house alone. We didn't have academic team to study for anymore. No homework that needed to be done immediately. And nobody was really watching us. It was easy to take her hand and gently pull her to my room. Easy to close the door silently behind us. But when I edged toward the bed, she shook her head and pulled me toward my desk chair instead. She sat in my lap, facing me. Her top might have come off, my pants might have been unzipped. But then the garage door opened, and we both scrambled to put clothes back on and race to the kitchen before my mom could open the door. I cannot overstate this. I don't think I've ever been more frustrated in my life. I kept thinking that if my mom hadn't come home, would we have done it? It always feels like she's ready when we're together, but maybe that's just because I'm a guy and I've been ready since, well, I've been ready for a while. After Maya left, Rebecca spent the next several hours throwing me casual glances that might have been smirks.
She seemed pleased with herself about something. She twirled her fingers in her hair and grinned. My mom asked me why I looked so distracted. I'm pretty sure I didn't respond. Chapter 29.
Dosage 4.5 milligrams. Same dosage. Will decrease next week.
March 27, 2013. Yes, I feel fine. Normal headaches, normal hallucinations, nothing new. Well, that's not entirely true. Something is new. Catholic schools have a lot of celebrations and recitals that require students to sacrifice valuable class time to practice. We waste an exorbitant amount of time sitting around in church, so our homeroom teacher isn't embarrassed when we have to perform in front of the whole school. We are her responsibility. If we suck, she's to blame. In this case, our entire junior class was in church. I was on stage in full costume, including the ridiculous fake crown of thorns, because this was our final dress rehearsal for the Stations of the Cross. The whole thing was a gigantic pain in the ass made worse by Sister Catherine's insistence that I stand the entire time to try to understand our Savior's pain. Because getting a leg cramp and an itchy forehead is basically the same as being murdered in front of a crowd of people you've known your whole life. When the last station was done, it was late in the afternoon already. All the non-essential soldiers and narrators had left for whatever sport was having practice that day. Maya had walked off with the other girls to change back into her uniform. I just stood there, messing with my beard, waiting to be excused, feeling grateful that it would all be over by next week. Sister Catherine looked up at me approvingly and then handed me the key to the tiny storage room behind the church. It had been my responsibility to walk my elongated cross back there at the end of every practice, lock up, and drop the key in the main office mail slot when I was done. I didn't bother changing out of my costume first. It was just as deserted as always. All the props and robes were neatly labeled in boxes. Jerseys and old sporting equipment were stacked in a heap to the side. I rested the cross on the two pegs they'd made for me and turned to walk out when I saw Maya in the doorway. She changed back into her uniform already and was holding a blue sheet in her hand, her Mary Magdalene costume. I remember every detail about the way she looked in that moment, but I can't tell you what she said before she closed the door behind her and walked toward me. I remember knowing that she wanted me in the same way that I wanted her, and that she wasn't going to push me away this time. Even so, I let her come to me. I wanted it to be her idea. Not because I was afraid of doing anything she didn't want, but because I liked the way it felt to be chosen. Not just by anyone, by her. We didn't speak the whole time. We undressed each other and then laughed when we realized I couldn't get my Jesus beard off without the adhesive remover, so I left it on. One of the nice things about being so much bigger than she is being able to pick her up like it's the easiest thing I've ever done, because it basically is. So I lifted her up and kissed her, holding her against my chest before gently setting her down on the folded costume I'd just taken off. The really bizarre thing is that I wasn't nervous, even though I knew we were both virgins. I might have been nervous if it had been planned, if I'd had more time to dwell on it. But in the moment, I wasn't afraid of anything. I didn't worry about not being able to get it up, not being able to last, not being sexy enough for her, not being big enough for her. I didn't worry about it because I knew I loved her, even though I hadn't told her yet. It wasn't Hollywood sex. Nobody screamed or broke anything. But after a while, I felt her body rise, and I smiled in relief. Hearing her come with short, excited breaths and watching her eyes open wide was something out of a dream. Especially when she said my name. Having an orgasm is pretty awesome. But giving Maya an orgasm was the best moment of my life. Even afterward, neither of us had anything to say. We just couldn't stop smiling. And it wasn't weird, even though I had my hand on her boob and she had hers on my penis. We stayed like that for a long time before Maya looked at her phone and then looked at me with regret. "Yeah, we should go," I said. We got dressed slowly and checked outside the door to make sure no one was there before walking to the front office to drop off the key. I was wearing my regular uniform again, but the Jesus beard was still firmly glued to my face. Every time Maya looked at me, her mouth broke into a grin. When she dropped me off at home, we still hadn't talked about what had just happened, but she'd held my hand while she drove. And when she kissed me, she put her hand up to my cheek and said, "See you tomorrow?" I nodded. We'd had sex in a storage room like it was something we did every day. It's probably really strange that I'm telling you this. I don't know anyone else who would share details of their first time, but honestly, it doesn't feel that weird. Okay, it's weird, but maybe that's one of the nice things about not actually vocalizing these things. I'm not sure I would have ever been able to say any of this aloud to anyone. Writing it down makes it feel more remote, like I can crumple this entry up and destroy it before anyone has the chance to read it. Once words tumble out of your mouth, there's no room for editing. It's out there. Maybe telling you this proves I can have a normal life. Chapter 30.
Dosage 4 milligrams, decreased dosage.
April 3, 2013. When my grandma was alive, she was the one who made my Easter basket. It always had peeps, which I've never liked, and those big, fat supermarket jelly beans that no one likes. But she also filled it with Cadbury eggs and Reese's peanut butter cups. I used to eat them Easter morning before my mom woke up. After Grandma died, we didn't celebrate Easter anymore. It was weird enough being an only child in an Italian family, but now we're the only Italian family in the world that doesn't do anything for Easter. This year, though, my mom forced us all to go to church. I think the thought of a heathen child suddenly makes her nervous. Limbo is supposed to be lined with the skulls of unbaptized babies. Easter Sunday is one of the days people pretend they're full-time Catholics even when they're not. It's the only time we've ever put on the big show, gotten dolled up, and acted like we actually agree with what's going on. It was probably better when the whole thing was in Latin. Mass seemed longer than usual. More uncomfortable, too, since it was standing room only by the time we got there with the rest of the people who only show up on holidays. Someone stood up for my mom because she's pregnant, but Paul and I had to lean against the back wall of the church for an hour. I started getting fidgety before the homily, and I spent most of my time avoiding the stained glass. Rebecca sat off to the side of the priest where the deacon normally sits. For some reason, there was no deacon for this mass, so she had the whole bench to herself. She met my eyes and smiled. I saw Maya there with her whole family, even her mom, who was basically the Maya of the future. When Maya noticed me standing in the back of the church, she blushed and turned back to face the altar. I couldn't stop grinning when she did that. I couldn't help it. It wasn't the fact that she got all red and embarrassed. It was that I had made her blush in church. She'd been reminded of what we did in the storage room, and I knew she was just thinking about it in church. On Easter Sunday, in front of God and everyone. And I had been dressed as Jesus. It's hard not to feel a little smug about that. Chapter 31.
Dosage 4 milligrams, same dosage.
April 10, 2013. The weird thing about yesterday is that I don't remember getting out of bed. I remember standing in my bedroom for a while, watching Rebecca sleep, and then walking out into the hall to stretch my legs. I was feeling twitchy. The other weird thing is that I didn't take my phone. I realized this even before I saw the mob boss in my family room lounging on my couch with a cannoli and a cappuccino. He didn't have the same manic look on his face that he did when he opened fire at school. He actually looked pretty calm. just watching while the two boulder-sized men behind him browsed our bookshelves.
"It's late. You should be sleeping," he said.
"I also shouldn't be seeing you." I was in no mood to be lectured.
"Cannoli?"
he asked, raising it to my face. It smelled delicious. That's how crazy I still am. I could smell the cappuccino and the cannoli as if I'd just bought them at a bakery or, you know, made them myself. The powdered sugar disappeared into a puff of dusty air when he took a bite, little bits falling on the rug.
"No thanks," I said. "Your loss, kid."
He stuffed the rest of it into his mouth and wiped the sugar on my great-grandmother's crocheted blanket. That irritated me for a second, and it must have shown on my face because his mouth split into a wide grin.
"You really want to yell at me for that, don't you?"
I didn't say anything.
"You don't have to. I've never met anyone so tightly wound. How did you get that stick up your ass, kid?"
When I didn't answer, he took a fistful of cookies and crushed them into tiny crumbs, dropping them deliberately onto the ground in front of him. This is the part where you would interrupt me and say,
"But Adam, at this point, didn't you know he was a hallucination?"
"Why, yes, Professor, I did. The same way I know that there are no monsters under my bed. But that doesn't mean I let my feet dangle over the edge either. It's difficult to know anything with absolute certainty, especially with a very real hallucination staring back at me."
"How long do you think you'll be able to keep this up? Do you think your little flip girlfriend is still gonna want to touch your junk when she finds out you're a schizo?"
I couldn't remember if flip was a slur or not, but I winced. "It didn't bother your mom," I said. The men behind him flexed their muscles warningly, but the boss actually laughed.
"That's more like it," he roared, wiping sugar from his lips. "We're a part of you, paisano. Every single one of us is a piece of you, and you hide us like we're trash. You're not real."
"Bullshit," he said. "To them, maybe not. But we've always been real to you."
I didn't say anything.
"And what about her?"
He tilted his head toward my bedroom, where Rebecca was sleeping.
"Are you casting her out too?"
"She doesn't make me crazy," I said.
"None of us made you crazy,"
he laughed. "If I can't see you, I can move on with my life."
"So if you can't see us, we don't exist?"
"I don't think that's how it works." "I'm going to bed."
"You do that, kid.
Just remember what I said.
You can't keep this up forever. The drugs can only do so much."
I walked back to my room and climbed into bed. Rebecca was still sleeping. Her hand found mine and I squeezed. She squeezed back. Chapter 32.
Dosage 3.5 milligrams, decreased dosage.
April 17, 2013. I feel fine. For most of this week, it was just Rebecca and the choir. The rest of them haven't been seen for days. How's my mom's pregnancy going? I'm a terrible son. I know I'm supposed to say that mom is glowing, that she's never looked more beautiful, but the fact is that I saw her eat an entire Costco bag of Doritos by herself and then burst into tears, which, without any context, is pretty terrifying. She's also left the remote in the fridge twice in the past week. Paul says it's called pregnancy brain, but he never says that above a whisper. Also, I'm pretty sure she used to have ankles. Now her leg just shoots directly into her foot. I mentioned this to Paul, who gave me a warning look, but didn't disagree. Maya says that her mom didn't have any of those mood swings or cravings. She basically just looked bloated until she was ready to give birth. This confirms my belief that Maya's robotic behavior comes exclusively from her mother. Maybe she's a clone. My mom wants me in the room when the time comes, but Paul has already said he's willing to make my excuses. thank God for Paul. The man has grown on me. I'm not sure I could handle the emotional turmoil of the birth while still pretending everything is magical. Without throwing up. As it is, it's going to be difficult not to be repulsed by the baby when they hand it to me for the first time. Newborns are not cute. They're hideous, squishy pink larvae that don't look like either parent regardless of what anyone says. Compared to the rest of the animal kingdom, human babies are fugly. I feel like I would be more emotionally attached to a baby platypus than a human. Maya agrees with me. She says that there's a picture of her holding her two brothers after they were born, and she's not smiling. I was afraid of them. Afraid of babies? I asked. You just wait, she said knowledgeably. They're fragile and horrifying, like tiny monsters that suck the life out of you. Every noise they make means something. And they always need something. Food, diapers, sleep. She grimaced. So you don't want kids someday? Probably not, she said. I waited for her to elaborate, but she didn't. So I asked her why. Because no matter what you do, they can still get messed up anyway. There's no guarantee that they won't do drugs or get sick or end up hating my guts just for trying to be a good mom. You worry about that kind of stuff? I was amazed. It was also kind of refreshing to hear, in a shit happens kind of way. If I don't have kids, I don't have to. How's your head? Fine, I lied. She's right, though, of course. Maya may not be the warm and fuzzy type. She might not even like kids. But she always notices the little things and responds accordingly like a friendly robot. She can read my moods, and she always knows when she can get away with asking a steady flow of questions, and when it would be best to wait for me to tell her something on my own. She may not be nice, but she's really good. And I'm not just saying that because I'm sleeping with her. It's been about 3 weeks since our first time, and every time since then has been different. The first time, neither of us knew what we were doing, obviously. I don't think either of us was nervous. If Maya was, then I'd missed it completely. The second time, Maya climbed through my bedroom window again, and instead of teasing me for hours, she got into bed with me, pulled down my pajama pants, and put the condom on me herself because I was already hard. I'm not sure how a person can be so regimented in one aspect of their life, and then so completely free in another. It makes no sense that Maya would color-code her notebooks, and analyze my headaches and then completely lose herself in sex without worrying about our parents finding out. But in this case, I don't want her to make sense. I want her to be Maya, and I want to have sex with her. The third time was completely different. I'm not saying that I didn't connect with Maya the first time or look into her eyes and drift off to another place, because I did that, as much as anyone can in a storage room. But this was different. We could actually study each other in daylight. It was just the two of us with no interruptions from anyone, including my imaginary friends. And I'm still not sure why they gave us privacy. I'm not supposed to say this, but she's not always as beautiful as she was that afternoon. I'm supposed to say that she is always beautiful, and that it doesn't matter what she's wearing, but that's one of those things that men say because it's the most correct way to lie. There are moments when Maya sort of looks like a newly hatched iguana with squinty eyes and puffy cheeks. Like in the morning, when we're sitting outside our first period class, waiting for the bell to ring. But that afternoon, she looked more beautiful tangled in my sheets than she's ever looked in clothes. We never stopped touching each other. I developed an appreciation for body parts that don't normally get much attention. Like her wrists, or the really tender spot on the back of her knee. I liked knowing I was the only one who got to touch her. There were long, comfortable silences where she ran her fingers across my stomach and let me twist my fingers in her hair. She smelled incredible. Not like perfume or lotion. Just like her. I felt like I could tell her everything. Like what I actually saw in church when I had to close my eyes, or why I had horrible headaches and couldn't sleep sometimes. Every fear I'd ever had. In those moments, I felt like she would understand, and nothing would change between us. But I didn't want to tell her like this. I didn't want to tell her all that stuff when I was feeling happy. It would have ruined the feeling for both of us. And then the afternoon wouldn't have been the day I opened my heart to Maya. It would be the day she found out I was broken. When she said she had to leave, I wouldn't let her put her clothes back on, which led to a wrestling match that gave me an unfair advantage. Poor Maya. Mom and Paul came home about half an hour after Maya left. They'd brought pizza, and Paul and I politely ignored my mom when she insisted that two extra larges were way too much for us, even though she finished most of one herself. Thank God for Paul, or we could have starved. That night, Maya climbed through my bedroom window. But instead of climbing into bed with me, she tilted her head toward the window and climbed back down. I followed her into the driveway and then toward the small park on the corner of our neighborhood. It was chilly out, and I thought she looked cold without a sweater. She glanced back at me, flashed a grin, and started running toward the line of trees on the far side of the park. When I was younger, I wasn't allowed to venture this far alone, and for some reason that old boundary tugged at me. I followed her to the other side of the trees, where the street curved out of the neighborhood and toward the freeway. Maya hadn't stopped running. She was ahead of me, far ahead of me, and when I called out, she didn't stop. I ran after her, until I saw her veer straight into traffic. I screamed her name, but she just turned into vapor as a truck plowed through her. It took a while before my mind could process what had happened. There had been no warning in my head that she wasn't real. I hadn't thought it was strange that she was running away from me. She was wearing her school uniform, and even that hadn't seemed out of place. The only thought in my mind had been to follow her. What if Maya wasn't real? I climbed back through my window and spent the night thinking I had invented her. Everything in my body hurt because I was so fixated on the idea that she might not exist. I was afraid to talk to my mom about it because I didn't want her to know if my girlfriend was made up. I was almost positive my mom had asked about her before. She'd come to the house for dinner and studying. Mom knew Maya existed. She absolutely knew. The little voice in my head kept asking, "Are you sure?" I got to school early and waited for her to show up. My head was pounding. When Maya finally arrived, I waited for someone to say something to her. Anything. I needed someone else to see her first and respond to her. Luckily, Sister Helen came into view and I heard her say, "Good morning, Maya. You're going to get us in trouble if you kiss me like that at school," Maya said when I finally put her down. "There are rules, you know. You can't just go touching me whenever you want." She smirked and twisted her hand into mine. "I'm not sure what you got out of this entry. Probably that I shouldn't be left on my own and maybe that I need stronger meds. But I'd actually prefer that you thought I was just a horny teenager. If you could just pretend that's all I am, I'd really appreciate it." Chapter 33.
Dosage 3.5 milligrams, same dosage, no change.
April 24, 2013. "Look, you don't have to try this hard. You could probably take a nap during these sessions and nobody would notice. I won't tell anyone." "I'm touched that you went out of your way to try, yet again, to connect with me. But even if I was, you know, normal, an art exhibit was a risky move, so you could have wasted your time. My mom was really glad you took me. You should have heard the way she went on about your innovative therapy style and how you really seemed to be reaching me. I think I have to care about the art itself, though. The fact that the paintings were done by someone like me doesn't make them more beautiful, and it doesn't make the artist less crazy. I almost ruined everything as usual by not appreciating the first exhibit you dragged me to. To be fair, it was full of bent penis flowers. Huge paintings of bent, flaccid penises with crowns of petals around the tips, making them look like the saddest flowers I've ever seen. I really want to say the right thing about this stuff, So if you could just tell me what I'm supposed to be feeling, that would be awesome. I assume that I'm supposed to be comforted by the fact that these artists are able to show people what they see in their heads, right? And because they're all schizophrenic, I'm supposed to be moved by their ability to reach beyond the limitations of their disease to create something beautiful. The painting of the cat wearing glasses in the garden is supposed to teach me something about embracing the crazy. But what I really think is, who cares about this cat? The answer is no one. No one cares about this cat. The artist barely cared about this cat. I think I know what happened. My last entry worried you. You seemed different when you read my stuff this week. Like you were afraid I was losing my grip. But I'm not sure showing me art from other people like me is the way to go. It's creepy. Why do they paint so many misshapen penises with flower petal hats? And that one guy, the one who painted all the cats, that guy is seriously messed up. The thing I really want is for the artist to stand in front of his painting and tell me what the hell he was thinking. If the cat is actually a submarine and the penises are actually people, then I'd like to know about it because looking at them on their own without any explanation is stupid. And I seriously hate when other people tell you what the artist was really trying to say. Like the museum curator standing in front of the painting with the bent penis flower, telling everyone that it symbolizes his detachment from the world of academia after he was diagnosed. It's a drooping flower with a penis for a stem. It could mean anything. Or it could just mean he wanted to paint sad penises and used flowers to cover them up. Let the artist come out and say, yes, this was a way for me to express my sadness after I was forcibly removed from my teaching post at Notre Dame for showing up on campus naked. It makes it more difficult if the artist is dead or too crazy to answer. But then we should just look at it. And that's it. We shouldn't pretend we understand. I just want to hear it in their voice. I don't want someone else who has no idea what their work means to speak for him. He probably spent the rest of his pathetic life trying to get people to listen to him. But they wouldn't because he was crazy. So he painted instead. And rather than let him tell someone exactly what his work meant, they send some lady with a BA in art history and an ugly green blazer to do it. But maybe you didn't bring me there for the freak show artist part. Maybe it was the other exhibit you actually brought me to see. The culinary one. I'd never seen food like that before. The cake towers were pretty impressive. And the rows of perfect fruit tarts that looked like jewels. I can see why they belonged in an exhibit. I've never seen food look so beautiful before. It was a lot of color. Like all the cooks and bakers had gotten high and blasted their ingredients with psychedelic paint. But I liked it. I liked the way everything was stacked precisely, like an army of food. The thing I like most about it is that I can do it. It isn't inaccessible like most art. It was beautiful because it was real. Anyway, thanks for taking me. Chapter 34.
Dosage 3.5 milligrams. Same dosage.
May 1, 2013. Yeah, I feel fine. Like I said, I'm better when I'm baking. It removes the distractions. And cream puffs might sound easy, but they're actually pretty technical. Even if you get the pastry part right, you never know if you've filled them enough. I had to cut a few of them open before I knew they were okay. And I did it with an audience. Rebecca was watching me from her kitchen stool, smiling every so often at the ingredients. She frowned when the mobsters walked right into the kitchen and let off a couple rounds into the ceiling, knocking chunks off the wall and into the sink.
"Can't ignore me forever," the mob boss said.
But I kept filling the cream puffs, and he eventually moved to the corner of the room to watch the festivities. I think you probably know that I hadn't exactly been looking forward to this baby shower. I wasn't expected to serve food or entertain guests or participate in any of the absurd games. But the event itself was not what I'd call a good time. On the plus side, I have never seen my mom so excited for a party. And my desserts were amazing. Paul's mom was ushered immediately into the living room with the rest of the guests before she could open her racist, homophobic mouth. That incidentally looks like a dog's anus. She just nodded in my direction and was dragged into the midst of the celebration by my mom's friend Mauv, who was coordinating all the activities. Yes, Mauv is a ridiculous name. It will not be on my list of suggestions for the baby if it happens to be a girl. Paul's mom sat rigidly on the couch and then immediately started speaking to Janice, my mom's old boss, the nicest person in the world. I wish I could have warned her, but that would have meant going over there, and I was not willing to do that. I just had to hope that Janice's kindness would not be destroyed when it came in contact with Paul's mom. Maya burst through the door a few minutes later, wearing quite possibly the ugliest sundress I've ever seen, which I didn't tell her. Before waving at her, I waited for my mom to say hello. I handed her a plate of cream puffs, and we watched the party unfold like visitors at some exotic zoo. Dwight's mom walked through the door like a pale, skinny stork. She waved at both of us before joining the crowd of squealing women flocking to my mom. I told Dwight about the party and that he was more than welcome to come too, unless he'd rather stick pins in his eyes or get diarrhea or do almost anything else. For some reason, he opted out. Again, I had to hear about breastfeeding because my mom got a breast pump as a gift. And then someone at one end of the room criticized someone at the other end of the room for using formula, and shit was about to get real. Everyone looked uncomfortable. Even Maya, who normally didn't pay attention to such things, leaned forward and said in a low, creepy voice,
"Blood in the water."
But Mauv was a professional. She chose that exact moment to start another game while my mom was opening gifts. The game was being able to identify the melted chocolate bar in the diaper. I will never understand why that was an appropriate use of chocolate. My head twinged a little bit on and off, but nothing too terrible. Maya distracted me with questions about the guests and a few robot-like observations. "You know, you probably aren't going to sleep much when the kid is born. They'll probably cry and wake you up. My brothers did." "Thanks, Maya. And the weirdest thing is going to be how nervous you are when it's sleeping." "What?" "You're going to check on it every time you pass its room just to make sure it's breathing."
"Babies don't breathe?"
This was a legitimate question. I wasn't exactly sure what babies were capable of. "They breathe very softly. Sometimes you can't tell."
"Awesome." Sometimes it's not actually a good idea to talk about this stuff with Maya. She's a little too clinical, a little too real. I don't want people to give me fluff, but I think I'd be okay if people didn't tell me directly that I'd be worried about a kid that is not mine. She could sugarcoat things a little. When I told her this, she shrugged.
"This is your kid," she said. "Your mom and Paul are going to rely on you way more than they would under other circumstances. You're old enough. You're responsible. You can handle it."
That was when I felt the guilt. I wasn't going to be able to help the way I was supposed to. I wasn't going to be the big brother my mom needed me to be. Even though I've been doing really well and the drug still works, they'd never leave me alone with their baby. The kid is going to grow up knowing that I am different, and then it might even feel obligated to take care of me. That was what I was thinking until the end of the party. And even though Maya didn't say it, I could tell she was waiting for me to tell her what was on my mind. I never did. So she changed the subject.
"Hey, the prom. You're taking me, right?"
she asked, raising an eyebrow.
"Aren't I supposed to ask you?"
"I guess."
"Why didn't you let me then?"
"I'd completely forgotten about it."
"Sorry, go ahead."
She sat back, waiting.
"Well, there's no magic in it now."
She rolled her eyes.
"Look, I'm asking you, will you go to prom with me?"
"I'm still missing the magic, Maya."
"Don't be a jerk," she said,
but her lip curled ever so slightly into a smile.
Okay, I'll go with you.
She kissed me and called me an idiot. Then she left with a tray of desserts after saying goodbye to my mom.